What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Plant and Sphere Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and thanks for tuning in. I am so excited to be in the studio talking about an actual football game with you guys. Preseason is over. It is time to get down to business. And what better way to start out than a top 10 matchup, number 5 LSU against number 8 Florida State in Orlando. This is going to be one of the games of the year, just like it was last year. It was top 10 in viewership last year. We know it had a crazy ending. And it's just going to be even bigger this year with even more on the line than last year. So really super excited to talk about this game with you guys. And, you know, there's been a lot of trash talk going back and forth between these two fan bases, which I think really does kind of make the anticipation a little higher, makes it a little more fun. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. That LSU fan base is confident. They think they're going to come in and blow Florida State out, that this is the same team that they saw last year. And to me, that's just not the case. I think it's going to go the opposite direction, but we're going to talk about it. I got a lot of interesting things I think you guys are going to find in this episode. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Now, before we jump into this, I have one other thing I'm excited to let you guys know about, and that's some new partnerships we have for 2023. I know I haven't hit you guys with any ad reads on this podcast yet, and we're going to keep it to a minimum, but I do want to tell you about a new partnership for 2023, Alumni Hall. Now, these guys have everything you need to get right for game day, from hats to shoes to shirts, new logo, old logo, anything you want, they got it. And you guys are going to get 20% off your order for the first 2 weeks of the season. You can either go into the store. They have a location in Tallahassee off Thomasville Road. You guys can go in there. Let them know Plant the Spear sent you. You get 20% off. You can go online, use code SPEAR, and get 20% off there as well. So go check those guys out. And I do appreciate them sponsoring us for this season. So with that being said, guys, let's jump right into this. Let's first talk a little bit about 2022. And, you know, this is a game where we know Florida State won in crazy fashion, 1 point. But there's a few things about this game that I think are really kind of misinterpreted. Like, first off, you know, Florida State, a lot of people will say that LSU won on a missed extra point. It was a blocked extra point. It was not missed. Florida State went out and earned that victory by blocking that extra point. Another narrative is that Florida State got lucky in that game. Now, you can't really call mistakes luck. So them fumbling a couple punts or whatnot or getting some kicks blocked, that's not luck. You can't chalk that up to luck. But you can look at where Florida State fumbled the ball on the 2-yard line, attempting to put down the kill shot to go up 35-17 late in the game. LSU got a play to almost tie the game up. That last score, that should have never even happened. They were down in bounds. The clock was at zero. I don't even understand how that even happened. So to me, I don't think Florida State was the lucky one in that game. There's also this big kind of deal with LSU fans that FSU only won because they got a tune-up game last year and because LSU was in game one. That's a fair argument. I understand that. It probably did help FSU get kind of in sync. But do I think Florida State beating up on a team like Duquesne while running a vanilla kind of game plan, and oh, by the way, they lost their starting right tackle in that game, that's not really a huge advantage. You also have to figure that Florida State did not have any film to go off of. Of course, they played Brian Kelly in the past, but this is new coordinators, new coaches, new players, so they were really kind of flying blind into that game. So to me, you know, a lot of it just piles up to excuses. But I think all that's out the window this year, so we're going to see how things go now in year two for LSU. But looking at 2023, setting the stage for this matchup, you know, last year there was a lot of hype around this game because you had two teams that are storied brands in college football, in the college football world, but they had recently kind of lost their way a little bit, fallen off the bandwagon, but you had some excitement behind Florida State with them turning their 2021 season around towards the end of the year. You have Brian Kelly coming in at LSU, and an established coach that could turn things around, and the game lived up to the hype. Now, this year, it's just a bigger game. There's more on the line. It's a top 10 matchup like we talked about. Both teams have playoff aspirations on the line. What better way to start off your playoff campaign than with a top 10 win? You know, both teams are trying to go out and win their conference. So there's a lot at stake in this one. Now, when you look at the matchup, LSU is favored in this game by 2.5 points, which the one that stands out to me is the ESPN matchup predictor gives LSU a 65.1% chance, which is kind of crazy to me. Now, that does have a lot to do with power rankings. And when you talk about power rankings, it does bring up an interesting point that you have to acknowledge. LSU has a high blue chip ratio. They're at 60% this year. They were above 60% last year. And to me, it's interesting when you hear a lot of the talk come out of the LSU fan base about, well, this roster was devoid of talent whenever they took over. They only had 39 scholarship players, and that is the case. But it was not devoid of talent. Now, they might have only had 39 scholarship players, but they took 19 players in the portal. They had a quality recruiting class with guys like Harold Perkins in it. So again, I mean, that roster was not devoid of talent, but that is something that you have to discuss when you look at them giving, like, and who cares what ESPN has to say? The games aren't played on paper, but, you know, you're just talking about a team that they do technically have a talent edge when you talk about star ratings. Now, we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a second with another stat I have for you, but when you talk about Florida State, we are confident that a lot of their players play above their star ranking. So that is a lot of the reason why they get that kind of advantage there, 65% chance to win, which to me, again, like I said, that's crazy when you consider Florida State beat them last year in the Superdome, a place where LSU does not lose. And you also have a lot of added new pieces for Florida State too, a lot of returning production. So to say Florida State, you know, they have a 35% chance of winning, that's kind of crazy to me. Some other storylines you need to know about in this game. Obviously, we know the news that recently came out with Mason Smith being suspended, former five-star impact defensive tackle for LSU. This is going to have an impact on the game. Now, is it going to decide the outcome of the game? I don't think so, but I do think it is going to have a big impact. I mean, you look at LSU looking into scheduling a week zero game just so he would be available for this game really kind of tells you how big of a piece they plan on him being for that defense. And, you know, now if you want to talk about luck or how things worked out last year, Florida State did kind of catch a little bit of luck in that game where you had Mason Smith get injured, and then you also in the first quarter, and then you also had Ollie Gay get tossed for a targeting penalty, which was a dirty hit. He deserved to be gone. But, you know, you had LSU without their two top defensive linemen or two of their top defensive linemen for three quarters of that game. And now they're, you know, a lot of those guys aren't back this year, and Mason Smith is also out too. So it is going to have an impact. Also, running back John Emery Jr. is not going to be available in this game. Didn't play against Florida State last year. I don't think he was going to be even the starter this year. And then also, obviously, we know the game is in Orlando this season. You don't have to play in the Superdome where LSU has a great record of success, where they planned on having the crowd advantage, which they did not because Florida State fans traveled extremely well for that game. But the reason I bring up being in Orlando and at Camping World Stadium, you know, we know both teams finished their season last year, so they're kind of familiar with the layout. That's nothing new there. But it's only just north of 60,000 seat stadium. So to me, even if Florida State has a 60-40, 70-30 crowd advantage, which I do expect LSU to transfer because it is, or travel because it is a top 10 matchup, I do think Florida State will still have the advantage being in Florida and being a lot of excitement around this team, even, you know, a ton more than last year. I think Florida State fans are really going to show up for this game. But in a 60,000-seat stadium, you're not throwing anything at LSU that they haven't seen before, playing at places like Alabama and Tennessee and things like that. So, you know, again, I just think the biggest takeaway there is that Florida State doesn't have the crowd advantage against them. So, you know, maybe it's a little edge, but I don't think it's anything that's going to really kind of rattle LSU or something like that. So now that we got the notes, the main takeaways that you need to know about, let's talk about these two teams. Let's talk about Florida State versus LSU. Now, they haven't played this year, obviously, so we have to kind of take a lot of what happened last year, combine it with what we know from the offseason, and see how it's going to kind of project what it's going to do in 2023. So one of the stats I told you about earlier when we were talking about blue chip ratios that I thought was important. Now, I don't know that this stat really does make a hill of beans. I'm going to be honest with you guys. But to me, it does kind of say something when you look at the Pro Football Focus 70-plus graded players returning. Now, this was a stat that I saw last year put out by a Georgia page on Twitter. They did not factor in transfers because Georgia didn't take any transfers, whereas I did. But the main takeaway was Georgia had the most PFF 70-plus graded players last year, and we know how their season went. They went on to win a back-to-back national championship. So this stat did seem kind of important to me. And now while we know PFF isn't necessarily the gospel, it is pretty good at judging who's an impact player and who's not. And 70-plus is about that quality Power 5 starter status. Now, the reason this is interesting to me is when you look at a team like Florida State who has 23 70-plus players coming back, 22 if you take away Daryl Jackson. I left him in the mix because we didn't know if his waiver is going to get overturned, and it's still a possibility that it could. But they have more than any other team on their schedule, and fun fact, Georgia had 20 last year, so Florida State even had more than they did last year. Now, LSU has 21, so they have a lot of quality players too, but the thing is, the reason why I find this is interesting is when you talk about LSU having a 10 to 15% higher blue chip ratio than Florida State, but Florida State has more PFF 70 plus graded players. What that says to me is Florida State's, you know, their returning production, the players that they have are really top quality. And, you know, that's what we talk about when we say guys play above their star rankings. You know, Jared Verse was a zero star recruit coming out of high school. He's a projected first round NFL draft pick. To me, that equals five star all day long. He was a four star transfer. You know, Jordan Travis, a three-star quarterback who's now in the conversation for the Heisman. So, you know, it just really, to me, more than anything, that speaks to what Florida State has as far as quality players coming back. Now, looking at the returning yardage for both teams, Florida State brings back 82.8% of their offensive yardage last year. LSU kind of surprised me here at 86.6%. They were a little bit higher. You know, when you talk about a lot of the returning production, Florida State steals the limelight there, but that was a little bit surprising. Now, they do bring back a lot on offense. But the defense is where I think it gets a little bit overlooked. But before we move on to that, let's talk about O-line career starts. Florida State has 206 combined career starts, most in college football. Bless you, Alex Atkins. Now, LSU comes in at 102, which is up from 41 last year, so they do have a lot more experience. The offensive line should not necessarily be a weakness, but you know, and they have higher star rankings and whatnot on their offensive line, so maybe they have some higher potential, but Florida State has done a really good job with their offensive line. You know, they had eight games over 200 yards rushing last year. Their sack numbers have continuously trended downwards under Alex Atkins. So, you know, they now have guys with Power 5 starting experience who are rotational players, and that speaks to the depth that they have been able to build. Now, flipping over to defense, what I was telling you about that I find interesting, Florida State returns 67% of their tackles compared to 42.4% for LSU. We know a big chunk of that came from Jamie Robinson departing. That was really the only impact player that Florida State lost. Now, you have some other guys that, you know, they did make an impact, but I feel like the guys they brought in to replace them or the guys that are coming up now, they're fine. But LSU lost some pretty important pieces on that defense, and that also gets shown in the big play defense stat, which is sacks, interceptions, tackles for loss. Florida State brings back 78.4% compared to 52.4% for LSU. Now, before we jump into talking about LSU, I just want to spend a few minutes, and we've talked about Florida State, so you guys are more than likely up to speed on FSU, but I just want to spend a few minutes talking about why FSU is not the same team that they were last year, like a lot of LSU fans seem to think is the case. Because there really just does seem to be this weird narrative. And it's not just LSU. It's amongst other fan bases as well. And I understand what a fan base has to say literally has no bearing on the season. It has nothing to do with anything. But there seems to be this weird narrative that Florida State brings back a lot of production, so they can't get better. And, I mean, that's just crazy. That's crazy talks. Because when you look at Florida State down the roster, you have Jordan Travis at quarterback. Last year was his first year as the sole starting quarterback one. He only had 350 passing attempts throughout his career up until last year when he had 353. So he literally doubled his experience last year. He has new targets this year, which brings up the conversation about a guy like Johnny Wilson, who only had, I believe it was 237 yards at Arizona State. You know, they also now bring in Keon Coleman, that legit wide receiver number two threat. So you cannot just double Johnny Wilson like we thought was going to be the case for most teams this year before they added Coleman. You know, we thought everybody was going to be focused on stopping Johnny Wilson, but now they have that legit number two threat where if you do that, you're playing with fire because Keon Coleman might end up being your best receiver by the end of the year. Johnny Wilson just also happens to be a physical freak at 6'7". Kentron Portier had a breakout spring and isn't even starting. This is a guy we're excited about, too. You have Destin Hill in the slot. While he's listed on paper as a true freshman, he is anything but. Now, we know it took him a few extra years to get here, but that means he is more physically developed than a true freshman would be. And this is a guy that I think really gets overlooked. He's obviously been keeping himself in great shape. He has incredible speed and a skill set. And if he's already listed as a starter, that means he's gotten up to speed maybe a lot faster than some of us expected. And he's going to make a big impact this year. And, you know, Florida State has eight guys on this roster last year that are starters now that weren't even on the roster last year. So this is, I mean, it's going to be a bit of a new team. Now, of course, you have the familiar names that come back, but you also look at tight end and the same trend continues. You have Jaheim Bell, who is an upgrade at the position, one of the most dynamic tight ends in college football, played for the Gamecocks last year, played running back, lined up in the slot, lined up at tight end, so you can use him all over the field. You have Kyle Morlock, 6'7", D2 All-American tight end, gives you another big threat in the red zone. On your offensive line, Now, Dylan Gibbons was a great player for you, but you bring in Jeremiah Byers at tackle. You bring in Casey Roddick, a massive human being with Power 5 experience, who's your starter at guard. You get Dimitri Emmanuel back. You got a lot of these guys who have experience. You now have depth on your offensive line that you didn't have last year. Looking at the defense, now we know they did have Fabian Lovett in this game. It was the game he got hurt in and missed a lot of the rest of the season, but if Fabian is back and a full go, you also added Braden Fisk. You also have a guy like Joshua Farmer who played a lot as a freshman last year, probably before he was ready, and now he has that experience built too. You have Jared Verse, who it was only his first year at the Power 5 level, and I think a lot of people forget that. You know, he has another year of development. He has another year now where he's played in the system and he's played against Power 5 competition to know, you know, when and how to improve his skill set. You have the ACC Defensive Rookie of the Year at the other defensive end spot that was a freshman last year. Now he has put on some weight and some size and developed his skill set as well. You know, we talk about the defensive tackle group being better. When you look back at linebacker, you have Tatum Bethune back there who, yeah, he's an experienced player, but last year was his first year in this defense. You know, LSU was only his second game in this defense. So now he has another year of being more comfortable in the system as well. Kalen DeLoach gets that extra year of starting ability or, you know, starting experience and to be able to develop. DJ Lundy, same thing. He was a young player, and now they have a lot more experience. You know, on the secondary, of course, Jamie Robinson is a big loss, but Renardo Green had a breakout season last year. Azaria Thomas was a great player as a freshman, but you saw him make freshman mistakes. Now he has that extra year of development experience in the system. You bring in Fentrell Cypress, who led the ACC and PBUs last year, even though Virginia only played 11 games. He was one of the hottest names coming out of the portal. You know, Shaheen Brown played a lot last year. So again, you've added a lot of experience to this roster. You've added a lot of crucial pieces from the portal, and a lot of FSU's impact players really didn't have a lot of experience last year, and now they do. This was a really young team last year, and a lot of people forget that. So to me, I don't think there's really any question that Florida State is not the same team. There's a lot of familiar names on the roster, yes, but it's a different team this year, and with that experience, they should be able to play faster. They should be able to open up the playbook a little bit more. They can go more up-tempo. You know, we have the new clock rule this year. So those are the things I'm looking at for Florida State to get better in 2023. Now, with that, let's flip over and talk about LSU. We'll start up front in the trenches with the offensive line. Now, we do expect them to be better. Like we said, last year they were starting a true freshman. They only have 41 career starts. Now, this year it's 102. But I do find a few things interesting about this offensive line because a lot of people think that they're just going to be this amazing offensive line, and I'm sure they will be good. They're not going to be a weakness this year like they kind of were last year. But at the same time, they bring back a lot of the same guys. They don't really add anybody new. And the reason why I find that interesting is two main points here. So first off, they finished 124th in sacks allowed, even with a mobile quarterback. Now, on an LSU podcast I listened to kind of get ready for this game, they talked about how they had to shuffle the deck a little bit early in the season to find their starting five. And once they got solidified, they got better. Now, when you look further down the schedule, Jaden Daniels was sacked 4 times against Ole Miss, 6 times against Alabama, and 7 times against Arkansas. We know FSU sacked him 4 times in the first game, so they had success against this defensive line too. Those games were later in the season, so how much better did they really get? And you also have to look at the other interesting point for me is they bring in another 5-star freshman sensation on the offensive line, Zaylen Hurd. He's got all the size you want, all the measurables you want. That's terrific. To me, when you have a guy, and they've said in camp that he's pushing for a starting spot, to me, my mind immediately goes to what does that say about the guys in front of him, the veteran players that you have, when you have a freshman who's pushing for a starting spot at a place, at a position where true freshmen don't normally start. Now, he may be, you know, an abnormality to that because he's, you know, he is who he is. But, you know, of course, they started a freshman last year with Will Campbell, but he was really the best they had. So, again, you know, to me, it's just the way my mind thinks when I see that it kind of doesn't say a whole lot for the guys in front of them. You know, and again, we look at how they performed down the year, later down the season. They didn't score a whole lot against Arkansas. I think it was only, they only put up 10 points in that game. So, to me, this offensive line should be better. But I don't think it's some kind of impenetrable wall that you can't have any success against. I don't think that's the case, especially when you look at FSU having an improved defensive line. So talking about running backs now, this is a group that wasn't really dominant last year. They didn't really have any game-breaking guys, and they still don't. That's why they brought in Logan Diggs from Notre Dame, a guy who put up over 800 yards on the ground, over 1,000 all-purpose yards. Can he be that RB1 for LSU? Can he be the guy that steps up? Because when you look at what they did last season, Jaden Daniels led with 885 yards, while the running backs as a unit only put up 1,564 additional yards. For reference, FSU put up 2,283 yards last season, just the running backs, with Jordan Travis adding another 417 yards. And do keep in mind, LSU had an additional game last year with the SEC Championship. So to me, it's just really been kind of an underwhelming group. And can Logan Diggs be that guy, that game changer for them? Because if he's not, they really don't have anyone there that scares you. Now, of course, an improved offensive line could help improve their running backs as well. But, you know, only time's going to tell, so we'll see. Even most of the LSU guys said that, you know, unless it's Diggs, they don't really have a dominant guy in the running back room like, say, Florida State does with Trey Benson. Looking at the wide receiver position, now we know, of course, they have Malik Nabers, who was an excellent wide receiver for them last year, broke 1,000 yards. He is their number one go-to guy. They said that he's gotten better during the offseason. He's developed even further. And, you know, again, it was his first year playing with Jaden Daniels at quarterback, so their timing should be better. He'll be good. He's the guy you got to watch for. The issue that comes with LSU's wide receiver group is who's going to be wide receiver number two. You lost Kayshon Boutte. You lost Jeray Jenkins. You lost Jack Beck, who was your number seven wide receiver, but all those three that you lost were 1, 2, and 3 in production in 2021. So, even the guys at LSU have said that so far through camp, no one's really stepped into that wide receiver two position. Of course, they have some guys that they feel good about with Aaron Anderson coming in from Alabama. And then you have Brian Thomas Jr., who they feel good about. But still, nobody has really stepped up so far. And if you don't have that clear-cut wide receiver number two, and not everybody has that luxury, that's something that Florida State didn't have for a long time. But unless you have that, and you have that really that one dominant guy, it's like we talked about with Johnny Wilson. You can now start shading coverage over to that side to help out with that dominant wide receiver. And are they going to be able to live off that one dominant guy? And there's another big aspect to this that we're going to talk about when we talk about quarterback play. So that's just something to watch too. Now, they also have breakout freshman tight end Mason Taylor, who was their number three in receiving yards last year. 6'6", big guy. You know, he was just a true freshman last year. So he's going to be an impact player for them. Now, talking about the most important position on the field, talking about quarterback and Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels is being mentioned in the Heisman conversation this year already. The jury's still out for me. Now, I'm not saying Jaden Daniels is a bad quarterback. What I'm saying is he's still inconsistent as a passer. Now, it made sense to bring him in last year because LSU had offensive line issues, so a mobile quarterback was not a bad idea. But no one was really sold on Jaden Daniels when he came in. I wasn't either. I think he even surprised me with the season that he had. But there's a lot of inconsistency there. Now, he is an elite scrambler, 885 yards on the ground like we talked about, 11 touchdowns. It's something you have to game plan for. We saw personally last year where he rushed for over 100 yards against Florida State. You know, realistically, they really were kind of out of that game until he started playing backyard ball and just running around making plays to get LSU back in it. That's really where a lot of their offense in the second half came from. Talking about sack-adjusted yards by Pro Football Focus, Daniels rushed for 1,079 yards last year. Of those yards, 61.9% came from scrambles to 38.1% from design runs. So it's not like they just run him a lot. It's just plays break down or he just takes off running. That is a lot of part of his game is just that scramble yardage. You see, it was 62% of his yardage last year. So his scrambling ability is a lot of what makes this offense dangerous. And it is a key to stopping LSU. But, you know, again, you got to kind of weigh what's more dangerous, a scrambling guy or keeping him in the pocket and making him beat you with his arm, which I think is what Florida State wants to do because he is dangerous when he gets out of the pocket. You know, but at the same time, when you look at that scrambling ability, even being a mobile quarterback, like we said, he was sacked 45 times last year, which was 124th out of 131 teams. His pressure to sack ratio was over 30%, which is really high. So, like, if you get into the backfield, you have a good chance of getting him on the ground. Now, when you talk about passing, which is obviously the most important thing as a quarterback, of course, he had a more talented receiving core at LSU than he did at Arizona State, but last year he went 266 of 338, 68.6% for 2,913 yards, 17 touchdowns, 3 picks. Now, he is very efficient with the ball as far as not turning it over. His turnover-worthy play rate was less than 1%, down at 0.6%, which actually was best in the country. So he doesn't turn the ball over a lot. Now, one of the reasons, and this is what I was talking about earlier when I said we get into what the receiver position had to do with this quarterback, because one of the reasons that his turnover-worthy play rate is so low, that he only threw three interceptions, is because he doesn't take a lot of chances pushing the ball down the field. 63.1% of his pass attempts last year were under 10 yards. They do not push the ball down the field effectively. His big-time throw rate was only 2.9%, which has a lot to do with deep passes, which was 132nd out of 172 quarterbacks with at least 100 dropbacks. Jordan Travis was at 7.1%, which was tied for third among Power 5 quarterbacks with the same workload. So again, I mean, you look at, they don't throw the ball down the field. They don't push it down the field a lot. What a lot of their offense was last year was kind of dink and dunking to a lot of these playmakers like Abute, like Jahre Jenkins, like Malik Nabers, and letting them work in space. Well, a lot of those guys are gone this year, and they have said that they need to push the ball down the field more, but you don't have a successful track record of doing so, and you lost a lot of the guys that may have been some of your best deep threats. So to me, just because you think you need to doesn't mean you can. And I think that's going to be something that's to watch for LSU this season, is will they be able to push the ball down the field effectively with Jaden Daniels? Now, you know, when you look at his passing, it was really inconsistent. He had 6 games with under 200 passing yards. He did have 209 versus FSU, and he had 2 games over 300. That's about as inconsistent as it gets. But when you look at some of the games that he threw for over 300 yards in, one was against Florida, who had the 83rd ranked pass defense, and one was against Tennessee that had the 127th ranked pass defense. When you look at the games where he faced top 25 pass defenses, A&M, FSU, and Alabama, his average dropped to below 200 yards. So there is some inconsistency there. He's not unstoppable through the air. Against Auburn, which was kind of middle of the road at 60th ranked pass defense, he only threw for 80 yards and no touchdowns. You know, after that game, that's when Brian Kelly urged him to let it rip more often, and that's when he had the 2 games with 300 passing yards. Now, 2 games later, he threw for only 86 yards against Arkansas, who literally had the worst pass defense in all of college football. So there's some inconsistency there. And can Jaden Daniels be the guy with his arm? You know, now that teams, a lot of teams, now just because you can prepare for a scrambling quarterback doesn't mean you can stop him. But, you know, now that they know that you may want to spy him, can he beat you with his arm? I do think one thing to talk about, obviously, is behind Jaden Daniels, you know, like we talked about, you have Garrett Nussmeier, who threw for 294 and 2 touchdowns in the SEC championship game against that Georgia defense. And I do think that Brian Kelly knows, while Jaden Daniels is the starter, he does have that gunslinger in his back pocket. So if you see a situation where LSU gets behind or Jaden Daniels struggles, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to see Nussmeier kind of get a chance in there, and Jaden Daniels maybe get the hook. But he is their bona fide starter. But, you know, again, it just, he's got an elite scrambling ability, but I still wonder, with kind of a depleted receiving core, can he be a guy that can beat you through the air with his arm? Now, moving over to the defense, again, we'll start in the trenches. So they lose first-team All-SEC B.J. Ojulari, Ollie Gay, and Jacqueline Roy, who were 3 impact players on that defensive line. You don't have Mason Smith in this game. That's going to be big for you there. Now, you still do have Makai Wingo, who was a 4th-team All-American. You know, he's a good player, so he's going to be, you know, someone that you have to watch out for. But my biggest question mark here is, without all those dominant defensive linemen, without Mason Smith in the game, are you going to be able to get pressure on the quarterback, you know, without having to bring a blitz with a guy like Harold Perkins, which is someone they like to use for that? And we're going to talk about him in just one second. But they did bring in 5 Power 5 transfers to try and fill some of those holes. The one I think you need to know about is Jordan Jefferson from West Virginia, where he did lead the team in tackles for loss last season. You know, this is still a defensive line that has some talent. But to me, when you consider the fact that they lost those 3 impact guys and they don't have Mason Smith in the fold, it's not as good as it was last year. And that's kind of just a fact of the matter until maybe they prove that they are. I just don't think that's the case. And so that brings the linebacker position into the group. into the conversation where, first off, we'll start by saying they did lose Micah Baskerville, who was a 30-game starter throughout his career at LSU. They also lost Mike Jones Jr., who started 9 games and played in 13 during his 2 years at LSU. So they did lose a few pieces, but they do bring back a lot of talent. You have Greg Penn III and Harold Perkins. You know, Harold Perkins is the name to know. He is the freshman phenom who came on late in the season, didn't even play against LSU. They didn't, or FSU. They didn't know what they had in Perkins early in the season. You know, and all we've heard about realistically over the course of this offseason is how he is going to just about single-handedly wreck this offense. And I just think that's, I don't know that that's going to be the case, you know, and I have some interesting numbers for that. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not taking away anything from Harold Perkins. I think he's a very talented player. I think he's going to get his in this game, but I think he's a guy that you're going to try and scheme around. This is something that we heard Brian Kelly talk about with Jared Verse. He's a game wrecker, and you have to, you know, try and game plan around those guys. And I think Florida State has enough targets and things where they may be able to scheme Harold Perkins out of a lot of this game. Now, like we talked about earlier, with their defensive line appearing to take a little bit of a step back and not having Mason Smith, they used Harold Perkins a lot on the blitz last year on pressuring the quarterback. You know, he may be a guy that even spies Jordan Travis for a majority of the game. The thing that I find interesting is, you know, if they end up sending him on more on pressures, you're going to leave a guy like Jaheim Bell in a mismatch against some of their other linebackers. Now, they did bring in Omar Spates from Oregon State. He led their team in tackles last year. You know, Oregon State had a pretty good year last year. And they also, he was first team all Pac-12. So they added a really talented linebacker to a room that already had a lot of talent. But the thing that I find interesting about Harold Perkins was they talked a lot about how, you know, they really didn't know how to use him last year, but he was very effective in rushing the passer. And one of the stats that gets tossed around is he had 4 sacks in one game, which tied the school record. Now, what I find interesting into that, and again, I'm not diminishing Harold Perkins as a player. I know he's an excellent player. But those 4 sacks came against Arkansas, who was using their third-string quarterback. You know, and I mean, let's be honest. He's not KJ Jefferson. As a third-string quarterback, you probably have a lot of deer-in-the-headlights moments where you're kind of standing back there, don't really know what to do, and then you have a guy that comes and cleans your clock. But if you look at the 4 games after Arkansas, Perkins only had 1 sack the rest of the season, and that came against Purdue, who also used a backup quarterback. He had an over 25% missed tackle rate in 6 of his 12 games. So, you know, I understand he was a true freshman. I get that. I'm not saying that he can't get better because he certainly can. But I think the numbers, you know, I think when you look at the numbers, he's not a guy that you can't kind of work to phase out of the game. Now, when you talk about the linebacker position in general, this is something we talked about in the Florida State preview, if you listen to that episode, where the game has changed in the last few years, where you spread them out, you run these, you know, a lot of passing, pass-heavy offenses, you spread everybody out, you don't line up in the box anymore. That's why you see a lot of teams run 4-2-5 now instead of a 4-3 defense, which is what LSU runs, the 4-2-5. So you are understanding that the impact linebackers have on the game now is not what it used to be. So you want those more pass-stopping players, pass-covering players on the field. And the reason that I find it interesting is when I said in that preview, when we talked about Florida State's linebackers, I said that, okay, well, this is a group that I don't feel like is your quote-unquote strength of your defense, but they're not a weakness either. And if I had to pick a group to be average on my defense, it would be the linebackers. You know, you would much rather have a dominant defensive line or a shutdown secondary than some good linebackers. And I think that's the position that LSU is in when you look at what you would want from your opponent. They have a really talented linebacker core, but their defensive line kind of took a step back. Their secondary has some question marks. I feel like you can scheme around these guys a little bit. Now, like I said, he's going to make some plays, but you know, what are you going to do with him? Are you going to bring him to help make up for the loss of Mason Smith and then leave somebody else in maybe a mismatch? Are you going to put him out in coverage and then give Jordan Travis time to pick you apart and or take off running, because we know he's an elite runner himself? So to me, while I think he's a great player, I do think there is some way that Norvell and them are going to scheme him a little bit out of this game. Now, moving back to the secondary, but like I said, they have a really, really outstanding linebacker core. This is going to be, if not the best, the second best you're going to face outside of Clemson, who has 2 really good linebackers there as well. And they will have an impact on the game. I don't want to make it sound like linebackers don't matter anymore, because they do. I just think there are other, if you had to pick somewhere for your opponent to be good versus the defensive line, linebackers, and secondary, you'd probably pick linebacker. So to me, that's why, I mean, they're a really good group, but if I had to pick a poison, that would be the one. So I do think Florida State will be able to get some things done. Now, when we talk about the secondary, obviously this is kind of the hot topic of the offseason for LSU. It's been a bit of a mess back there. You know, last year they brought in a lot of transfers to rebuild their secondary. It was game one against Florida State with a lot of new faces, trying to learn a defense, trying to make sure they are in position and things like that. And that's going to be the case again this year because a lot of those guys are gone. They only bring back one starter, and that's safety Greg Brooks Jr. And, you know, they did bring in some pretty decent transfers, but I think a lot of the guys that are coming in aren't much better or have not yet proven themselves to be better than the ones that left. Now, they didn't have a lot of depth last year, but the guys they had stayed healthy and they were pretty good. They do bring in Andre Sam at safety, someone who played at Marshall and was a good player there. They also brought in Zy Alexander, who comes in as an FCS All-American with a lot of experience from Southeast Louisiana. But how is he going to be able to play at the Power 5 level? Not everybody is Jared Verse. You know, not everybody can come from the FCS and play themselves into a first-round NFL draft pick. You know, now they said he's kind of held his own against Malik Nabers in practice. You know, he doesn't always win, but he puts himself in a good position, which, you know, that either says he's a really good player or maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe about Malik Nabers a little bit. But, you know, again, you're turning now the secondary at LSU is turning to FCS players. You're turning to a guy in Deuce Chestnut that come from Syracuse. You know, you had, of course, Denver Harris come in from Texas A&M, who was a five-star transfer and had a great season there until he got booted off the team. There's been all kinds of problems since he showed up with the fight and getting dismissed, you know, or put in timeout, whatever. He didn't get dismissed. He spent a weekend away from the team and was right back. So, you know, after he got out of timeout, but they said he's run with the twos and threes most of the time. So that transfer really didn't plan out as they thought. And from what the LSU guys say, you know, a lot of their fans are like, well, it's fine because he really wasn't an impact player anyway. But when you listen to some of the LSU beat guys, it sounds like they planned on him being part of that rotation. And so the fact that he's not could be something to watch here. You know, of course, they brought in J.K. Johnson from Ohio State, but he got injured in the preseason, so he's not available. Like we mentioned, they have Deuce Chestnut, who came in from Syracuse, solid player, third-team All-ACC in 2021. But when you look at 2022, he did face FSU. He allowed an 83.3% completion percentage for 28 yards and two touchdowns. So it's not like he was locking you down. You know, Johnny Wilson had a touchdown on him. So it's, again, it's just this secondary is still, you got a lot of new faces that got to get on the same page. You got a lot of guys that have to prove that they have the talent level. You know, your most talented player doesn't even look like he's going to be on the field. And to me, you know, like we talked about before, that kind of makes your mouth water whenever you think about Florida State and them being having that pass game. And, you know, when you look at LSU later in the season, we talked about how they said they got better throughout the year. But in five of the last eight games against Power 5 teams, they gave up over 30 points. So this, you know, you can score on LSU. And to me, the question in this game comes down to, you know, what is the number that you're looking for? Is it 40 points? I don't think it's going to be that high, but if you can get to, say, 35 points, which defense is going to show up to limit the other offense more? I personally give the edge to FSU having a better offense. They were better last year on offense. They should be better this year on defense. Offense. And I think when you look at the two defenses, you know, they have some talent there at LSU, but I just really feel like Florida State's defense with the experience and the production that they bring back should be able to limit some of the things that LSU is able to do. So to me, that's an advantage for FSU. Now, one thing to touch on with LSU is their special teams was pretty bad last year. They finished outside the top 10. They muffed four kicks. They averaged under 5 yards per punt return and only hit 71.4% of their field goals. Now, we are not one to talk about missed field goals, but, you know, Ryan Fitzgerald did hit 8 of his last 11. They do have Keltner there for some competition and depth if things go sideways. But it's not like you're going to be just completely outplayed in the third phase of the game here by LSU. And, you know, so as we get ready to wrap this up and make a prediction, one thing that I do want to talk about is what LSU did in 2022. They went 10-3. They beat Alabama. They won the SEC West, which is great. That is a significant season for them in year one under Brian Kelly for a program that had kind of come off the rails at the end of Orgeron's tenure and all that. You know, we talked about that. So the thing is, when you dig a little bit deeper into that 2022 season, there's kind of an interesting picture there. So, You know, we all know they lost to FSU. We talked about that. But they also lost by 27 points at home to Tennessee. Now, Tennessee was a good team, but they dismantled LSU at home. And then the game that's the most interesting to me was, we know they had that black eye on their schedule. They lost by 15 points to a 4-win Texas A&M team. Now, they have a lot of talent at Texas A&M. They just didn't do anything with it. This is a team that lost at home to Appalachian State last year. So shout out Jimbo doing more with less, or doing less with more. But, you know, that's a game where a lot of the LSU people, they say, okay, well, it was game one. You caught us when we weren't ready. We weren't experienced. We hadn't gelled yet and all that stuff. This game is my counter argument. You had 11 games to prepare for Texas A&M to get that rhythm down, and you got beat by 15 points to a 4-win team. So, you know, to me, it's just, you look at, they lost by 20 to Georgia, but then again, you know, kind of who didn't, which Georgia had some close games last year. And I mean, they dogged LSU in the SEC championship game. Now, when you look at some of the games, even that they won, they trailed a 5-win Auburn team by 17 points. They trailed Mississippi State by 13 points. They trailed Ole Miss by 17 points. They did come back to win all three of them games, so they get the credit for that. They only beat Arkansas by 3 points, as we mentioned, without KJ Jefferson, with their third team quarterback in there. 3 of their 10 wins came against FCS Southern, who only won 7 and, you know, went 7-5 as an FCS team, a 2-10 New Mexico team, and a 7-6 UAB team. They dominated Purdue in the bowl game, but they didn't have their starting quarterback, an All-American wide receiver, two defensive linemen, and Drew Brees was the interim coach for that game. So, you know, I mean, yeah, you still went out and smoked them, but it's just when you look at the records, when you look into the details of that schedule, you know, yes, beating Alabama was huge for them. It was a massive win, but by Alabama's own standards, it was a down year for them, and LSU got them at home off of a bye week and beat them by 1 point in overtime. So it just wasn't a dominant season by LSU. It's not like they were out pounding everybody into the sand like a lot of people make it out to be. You know, the SEC West is still a really good division, but they didn't have the greatest year. Of course, I'm not too proud to admit that Florida State, you know, plays in the ACC, which isn't exactly the toughest conference. But when you look at their losses, they lost 3 games to ranked teams by a combined 18 points. And NC State was a team that was, after the FSU game, was 5-1 with Devin Leary there. And their only loss was to Clemson. You know, Clemson, even though we're kind of questioning where's Clemson at right now and things like that, you know, they still went 9-0 in the ACC and played in the Orange Bowl. You know, FSU finished the season beating 4 ACC teams by a margin of 168-36 and ended the game on a 6-game win streak, whereas LSU ended the season 1-2 in their last 3 games with the 1 win coming against a depleted Purdue team. So I'm not saying LSU's not good, and I'm not saying 10-3 and winning the SEC West was not a bad year. What I am saying is when you look a little deeper, they kind of skated by in a lot of those games. You know, they could have lost. They very easily could have lost those 3 games that they trailed by double digits. Now, I know you could argue that Florida State could have lost some games here and there too, but, you know, they were only a couple games away from being like a 7-win team. So that is something that to me is interesting this year. So, you know, when we zoom out and we talk about everything that we just talked about, I think Florida State has, I like the way this game matches up. Now, LSU, if you want to look at paper, on paper, and games aren't played on paper, we know that they have the high-end talent. They have that blue chip ratio. They should beat Florida State. It is year two. They say teams make the biggest jump from year one to year two. So you can expect them to be better as a team as far as familiarity in the system and things like that. Now, I think that a lot of, they're going to take a little bit of a talent step back from some of the guys that they lost. But, you know, I like the way they match up. I like Florida State having a deadly pass game against a questionable secondary. I think with Mason Smith being out, I think Florida State's offensive line can do enough to stop the pressure. I think if you can scheme around Harold Perkins, I think Florida State shouldn't have a whole lot of trouble scoring on this defense. I think you're going to have to obviously game plan for, you know, the scrambling ability of Jaden Daniels. I think you're going to have to watch out for Malik Nabers. I think it's going to be a higher scoring game this year. But you're also not in their backyard. You're not in the Superdome. So to me, you know, when you just consider all that and you consider why Florida State should be a better team, I don't see why they can't get the win here. And, you know, last year I picked Florida State to go in there and upset them And, you know, it's funny, I was on a LSU radio station last year to preview the game for them from an FSU perspective. And I did a little bit of scouting before that game last year, and a lot of the talk was they thought they were going to blow FSU out last year. So it's kind of that same big-headed mentality that they have coming into this year. And I don't see that being the case. I'm taking Florida State again this year. Like I said, it might be a little more high scoring. I'm thinking it's going to be – I have the score prediction at 34-27, Florida State. Getting the win, starting out the season with a huge top 10 victory. You know, like we talked about, Clemson might be the most important game on the schedule, but this might be the biggest. And I do think Florida State gets the win in round two. I do think they top the Tigers in this one. You know, I hate when I feel this weird sense of confidence, because usually it does not work out in my favor. But, you know, I was telling someone the other day, I said, honestly, the more I dug into this, the more I stopped listening to the talking heads and the more I looked at things, if you held a gun to my head and said, what's the more likely scenario, FSU to win by double digits or FSU to lose? I would take FSU to win by double digits more than I would take them to lose. And that's just because when you look at the pieces, when you look at the matchups, I just think Florida State's the better team in this game. And I think they match up well, and you get them in Orlando. So to me, like I said, guys, I mean, it's a toss-up. Either team could win this game. The fun thing is, even if you lose, you can still go on to meet a lot of your goals. You can still win the ACC. You could still potentially even make the playoffs. And who knows, you might even see LSU again in the playoffs. It's going to be an exciting game. It's going to be a huge primetime game for Florida State. And I think Florida State wins. I have them winning this game again. So I'm just really excited to get started with the season. I'm really excited for this to kick off. I hope this comes to fruition, you know, because if they do win, we're going to have to go visit a lot of comments on social media. And if they lose, yeah, we're going to hear it. But I think Florida State, I feel good about this game. We're going to have some pregame shows on YouTube. You guys check that out. Hopefully, we're going to be able to do a postgame wrap-up as well, even if it is late night. Hopefully, we're celebrating a big win. But, yep, that's it, guys. We're going to wrap this one up here. I got Florida State winning 34-27, and I hope you're excited for this game as I am. We'll talk to you guys on the other side. Thanks for listening. As always, go Noles.